Support for KPCW comes from Crandall Capital and New Park Town Center, with new retail spaces and a year-round community development. Information about New Park Town Center is available at 801-303-5440.
KPCW. Ski Butlers delivers skis, snowboards, and accessories to our customers' accommodations in the greater Park City area. What we do would not be possible without the support from our amazing customers, partners, and team members. Ski Butlers is located next to the Marriott on Sidewinder or online at skibutlers.com.
Hi, this is local landscape architect and KPCW sponsor Seth Bockhold. It may be winter, but that doesn't mean you can't get a jump on spring landscaping by planning ahead. Bockhold Landscape Architecture is located at the Reed Building and on the web at bockholtlandscapearchitecture.com.
Welcome to our, once again, our special KPCW Saturday morning film panel. Last film panel of the year, pre-Christmas, pre-Sundance, all that stuff. We should mention the devoted fans of Steve Leonard tuning in to expecting to hear music. That's not quite, have to hang on just for a little while. That'll start at 11 a.m. with Steve. But in the meantime, we have our expert film panel, starting from my right to my extreme right. No political reflections. We have Jill Orschel sitting right by me, and then beyond her is Mark Harrington.
Good morning.
And beyond him is the talented and lovely Arlene Francis. No, actually, it's Linda Jader.
Hello,
I was having a What's My Line flashback.
Hey, Rick.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, all. We were just getting into a little about what's out in theaters these days, and in particular, what might look like some strong Oscar contenders, but Linda, you were pointing out that maybe people do not understand just what you have to do to qualify for the Oscars in terms of what point of the calendar you're out in a theater.
Well, I don't have the full answer. I was hoping that you, the expert, could guide us in that direction, but just doing some reading and background getting ready for today, there were so many titles I saw thrown around that, not a lot of folks have heard of these films. And I think that's a question everyone has when the nominations come out. Like, what's that movie? Where was that released? I haven't heard it. So I don't know. Jill, you have any background you want to add?
Well, I just know that these films need to have a theatrical release, and it costs a lot of money, and sometimes they get pushed through at the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's not a new thing that it seems like something that's a strong Oscar contender. It used to be that maybe you wouldn't see it in Salt Lake until January or something, but it has to get out in certain major areas. For all practical purposes, probably New York and L.A.
Mm-hmm. Well, like Jackie, the release of Jackie. I mean, it's not on wide release yet, but I've heard amazing things about that film, and I've seen it in the conversation of Oscars, but, anxious to see when it's coming our way.
Mm. Well, talk a little more, Linda. What are you anxious? We'll have you talk about what you're anxious to see, and then what have you seen that maybe you're rooting for Oscar gold?
What I'm seeing lately, I haven't had a ton of free time. I actually was surprised with Rules Don't Apply. I saw it a couple weeks ago, and wasn't the film I had planned on going to review, but just with a scheduling change, I said, okay, I'll give it a shot, and it was interesting, but I did see it mentioned on a list of a long shot for an Oscar, which I thought was interesting, because reviews weren't wonderful, so I thought that was, I don't know, had any of you seen that or heard about the film? It's Warren Beatty playing Howard Hughes, so it's a big passion project for Beatty. I think it took him almost 40 years to have that made. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it was interesting. And I am probably looking forward to seeing Manchester by the Sea. I wasn't able to get in during Sundance and just heard amazing things about the film. And that's one I've seen on several lists as an Oscar favorite. So looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, one of the things they seem to do is the marketing teams of these films, getting them out right around now, so it's really fresh in the Academy's mind, you know, right before they're judging or during the judging. And then all of a sudden there's this momentum built.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think that's where you see films like Sully that was, when it came out, had a broader appeal than I think most anticipated, mm-hmm. both popular and critical. And I think that will suffer because of this late push of such a widespread slate of high quality films, and you're gonna see some real artistic films in the final 3 weeks here, mm-hmm. that are really gonna leap to the forefront of the race.
Mm. Well, in terms of Mark, what you've seen in recent months, is there anything that has struck you that you would hope for some recognition?
Not really. I think the pre-fall season is always a lackluster lull, and that pre-Thanksgiving time period is just so weak. And seeing things like Doctor Strange was, a very entertaining film, really hit the mark with a loyal fan base. But in terms of, is it going to be anywhere near a high category award film? Certainly no. Allied was probably a little disappointing. Brad Pitt's latest big film about a spy thriller. A beautifully depicted film, but didn't have quite the depth that I think people were hoping for in it. I think really the strongest type of films that came out were, again, the children's films. I think Disney is killing it, not just because of Star Wars, but because their slate has just really been strong. And so Moana was excellent, really, I think, exceeded expectations. Mm-hmm. Really good kids cartoon based on some mythology in the Hawaiian Islands, and really beautifully shot and well done. Trolls, wasn't a great film, but it hit a good fan base with the musical element, and little kids loved it. And so, again, I think, there was a lot of diversity for kids to see this fall, where the rest of us were waiting for these releases that are coming up this week.
And I saw Jungle Book on a Oscar contender list, too.
Yes, that's on my list to see. It's so great that in recent years, there's, like, family films, films that really appeal to the kids and adults. There might be some adult humor in there that they might pass over the kids, but it's also enjoyable for them. Jungle Book's in there, and I just love that.
Zootopia. Yeah. I think if it were coming out now, would be a stronger play. I think it will still probably get I'd be surprised if it doesn't get a Best Film nomination. I don't expect it to win or be competitive, but I think it'll be on the list.
Best film or best animated?
Best film. I won't surprise me if it crosses over. But
Zootopia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Back on the family. Yeah, Pete's Dragon did, I think, better than most probably anticipated. And Finding Dory, of course, killing it altogether. Mm-hmm. That's the number one gross film worldwide this year, is Finding Dory. So that's crazy.
Yeah, so they are giving some respect to animated films, although, like you said, we're not quite to the stage where, Marvel comic or DC comic movies are maybe getting Oscar consideration. I'm not sure Rogue One will be getting any serious attention.
No, and we talked a little bit about Captain America, Civil War last time, and I think they've done well to bring some additional both political and sort of social depth to the plot lines in those, and not just been rock'em sock'em CGI, but they're still not going to be in neither are the Star Wars films, as entertaining as those are, especially with the Academy voters. They have always held those at a step below.
Hmm. Well, that reminds me, Mark, I know you saw the film. I think you did a review about it. But what's the prospect for something like Hell or High Water? Which
and that's that's a great question. I think that's another victim of timing. I think had that come out a little later, certainly with the, because I think it is super, it should be super or more relevant for the election, because I made that point a few months ago, and I thought...
Tell that story again, if you could.
Well, my favorite two scenes in the film are the two scenes in the cafes with waitresses. And the first scene is a waitress that takes a huge tip from one of the bank robbers. And this Texas Ranger, not an FBI agent, not a carpetbagger, a cop, or, you know, a Texas Ranger says, "I'm sorry, ma'am, I'm going to need that money as evidence." And she just looks at him and says, "Take a hike. Like, I am keeping this money. This is my money." And he's like, looks at her. He's like, "This is a small town. This guy just shot your neighbor and took probably your money out of the bank." She goes, I have nothing to do with that." And he's like, "How can you condone?" You know, it's a very similar parallel. How can you condone that and take this money? And she's like, "I am powerless over that. I have nothing to do with any of that. But I can put $100 of groceries on my table tonight, and you're not taking this away from me. So go away, Mr. Texas Ranger." And to me, that is a lot of the Trump voter sentiment. And I think that's part of what's lost in the current debate still, except for people like, you know, I think Van Jones is certainly trying to go there. John Stewart from the sidelines is saying, "Hey, you can't call 59 million voters, you know, by the description of what they condone, what they allegedly condoned. They're, by numeric definition, they all can't be racist." Oh. And so the second scene is another waitress that asks the two rangers what they want or what they don't want to order. And she won't accept. She's like, "What don't you want? We have one option with two sides. What side don't you want?" And to me, that's why the polls weren't wrong. The polls asked who they would choose if they were choosing what they wanted between those two particular individuals. That's not what those particular voters voted for. Or base their decision on. They voted on change or government, the same, not the same. And so when they answered the question, they were answering truthfully, but when they went to the voters box, they voted for change. And, the numbers show that. And so I think that's really, this film is also beautifully made. And just the way it depicts a slice of West Texas is just, it's subtle. But just the long shots, the technical components of the framing is just magnificent. So highly recommend.
And Jeff Bridges stars in it.
Yeah, and he gets a little bit. That was the only drawback for that film for me. He was a little bit over character for me. You know, I compare it to what was the Irish film with the just escaped me for a second, but with Gleason from Sundance.
The General?
No, you're close. Anyway, I'll come back. But he's this just real strong Texas Ranger, and just with all these great lines and one-offs and really witty dialogue. But it was too much of a caricature for me. But that was really the only fallback in that film for me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, there's sort of. Another in
the guard. I was thinking of the guard.
The guard. Okay, oh, yeah. Okay. But the waitress scene, an update, waitress scenes that encapsulate the mood of America, which is an update on Five Easy Pieces, where Jack Nicholson struggles to get the substitution out of the out of the uptight waitress. Mm-hmm. So we got a new version of that. 45 years on.
Yep. What don't you want?
Yeah. and Jill, what have you seen that you wish would get some Oscar consideration?
You know, two recent films that I've seen that I really loved. Fantastic Beasts, the J.K. Rowling's, from the Harry Potter sequel, but it goes back in time. And starring Eddie Redmayne, and I just fell in love with that guy. He's just so earnest, and You know, sometimes you think, oh, Harry Potter's been done, and oh, should I really see it? Oh, it's every bit as magical and, you know, wonderful. David Yates, who directed two of the Harry Potter, I think two of them, original, directed this, and I just loved it. And I'm sure we're going to see them during Oscar time, especially in the technical aspects. It's just an incredible film. And then another one of those that, you know, our whole family went and everybody enjoyed. I also was just blown away by Moonlight. One of those films where it's about a young black broken up family boy who's gay but not sure he's gay at first, and just his journey in life. And you know, you think, what, how could I relate to that film? But I went home going, wow, that film is about me. It just so resonated. It was just when a really good movie can do that. It's very specific in its you know, characters and place, but then also very something that we all can go, wow, I'm there.
And of course, the nomination I would put in the 30 seconds I have left. I have not an encyclopedic examination of the field. I would hope for some respect for Arrival, just that kind of a interesting sci-fi movie about a first contact with extraterrestrials, with an emotional underlayer that you think you know the role it plays in the movie, and then it kind of sneaks up and gets you in the last 15 or 20 minutes. And Oscar-worthy performance from Amy Adams. So we'll get back to movies and discuss what the hell happened to a surefire Oscar contender.
Instead of throwing heads, they're busy building toys, and absolutely no one's dead. There's frost in every window. Oh, I can't believe my eyes, and in my bones I feel the warmth.
Wake up to the Marketplace Morning Report every weekday at 6:50 and 7:50 during the morning news with Leslie Thatcher. Brought to you in part by DeJoria Center at High Star Ranch. Esco Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electrical. That's Esco, ESCO. And Cushman Wakefield Commerce Commercial Real Estate.
This is Earl Foote, founder of Nexus IT, a proud sponsor of Cool Science Radio on KPCW. Nexus IT provides comprehensive cybersecurity solutions to help protect your business from hackers and today's internet-borne security threats. More information at nexusitc.net or at 435-487-9099.
Wayne Devy here with Cascade Collision Repair, a KPCW supporter. We've been repairing damaged cars and getting people back on the road after an auto accident since January of 2000. We work with all insurance companies and are excited to be a part of Park City. Open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5 on North Forestdale Drive. CascadeCollision.com or 655-8010.
What's this? What's this? There's powder everywhere. What's this? There's white things in the air. What's this? I can't believe my eyes. I must be dreaming. Wake up, Jack. This isn't fair. What's this? What's this? What's this? There's something very wrong. What's this?
What's this, Whites? Snow gently falling on Sweet Alley. So we will have a Christmas season. Even Jack Skellington could get into that. But what's the raising another question? You know, I remember a wonderful Saturday Night Live skit that they did after the House failed to impeach Bill Clinton, and not only that, but that Newt Gingrich was deposed as leader of the House, and he's shown in the bar afterwards saying, "What the hell happened?" And I wonder if Nate Parker is somewhere in a bar going, "What the hell happened?" His film Birth of a Nation was the sensation of Sundance, got a standing ovation before the picture started, and a record-breaking distribution deal, and came out of last year's festival as a surefire Oscar contender. And now Mr. Parker's name is is like on a par with Mel Gibson, and the film performed weekly at the box office. It could arguably be considered a box office bomb. So Who wants to jump in and sort of relate the story of what the hell happened?
It's so interesting. It's so many different layers going on right here. You know, Linda was just mentioning that Ben Affleck.
Casey Affleck.
Has a charge against him.
Yeah, I guess there were two harassment complaints. And so Casey Affleck is starring in Manchester by the Sea. So another Oscar contender, big performance. And, you know, that hasn't come to haunt him in his current performance as much as what's happened with
Right.
Birth of the Nation.
Yeah, so a white male, he's getting, you know, by. But, you know, so I don't know how much we've described here, but...
Maybe you should go as if nobody has read Nate's Wikipedia.
Yeah, so Nate Parker was charged in 1999 when he was going to Penn State. He and his roommate were charged with sexual abuse of somebody in their dorm. And that's come to haunt him now. And that woman is also... committed suicide in 2012. And so he's, you know, like all these directors, you know, Woody Allen, Roman Polanski, Alfred Hitchcock now has been, you mm-hmm. know, we love these directors, and they all are surrounded by this sexual abuse in their history. But they all were established artists, and we grew to love their movies. Even Marlon Brando and Last Tango in Paris, mm-hmm. you know, that recent, it's
out,
like,
yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's just horrifying to hear that. And so now Nate Parker, who's, you know, new to the scene, I just really think we've come to a time where it's like, you know, get it together, men. These days are over that we're going to be even a little bit sympathetic. So that's kind of my position right now.
Mark, any?
No, I think, and there's other factors as well. I think the timing with, Black Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter, All Lives Matter controversy. I think audiences just weren't really, you know, my free time escapism. I'm going to go see, you know, The Birth of a Nation. You know, not really. You know, that's, and you've seen the films. You know, I don't think it's any coincidence that both, you know, the musicals and some of the lighter fare films are rising to the forefront during this type of campaign and political season that we've had. You know, people have gone to the movies to escape the in-your-face aspect of it. So I think that played a part as well, but it certainly compounded it. His own cast has been somewhat, I'd say, not necessarily critical, but they wished he'd handled some of the media relations mm-hmm. differently. Mm-hmm. Notwithstanding recognizing he's in a no-win situation, but in Toronto in particular. And so I think all of that combined, and the film is violent and is in your face. And that is never, when the films go that far, they always have a broader or a different problem transcending into popular movie going, and I think it will see a resurgence here in the last couple of weeks, perhaps. It's still the highest grossing film out of Sundance 2016. It hasn't crossed the purchase price yet, but it is getting close. So yeah, it's certainly not meeting expectations, but they're probably not going to lose money on it. Hopefully, people still go see the film. It is a very powerful film.
Yeah. Just to fill in a little background, I mean, in terms of the sexual assault allegation from 1999, I mean, Parker was acquitted mm-hmm. on all four counts brought against him. His co-defendant and his roommate, I mean, happens to be the co-writer of the film, Birth of a Nation, and Jean-Johnny Celestine, and his whole tangled court history was he was convicted, but he appealed the case on the grounds of ineffective counsel, and that was overturned. He was granted a new trial, but the prosecutors declined to go for a new trial because the witnesses were all over the world by then. So in terms of being convicted in a court, his outcome was inconclusive, but so technically you're supposed to presume he's innocent until he's proven guilty. But it's also colored by the idea that they hired Parker and Celestine hired a private investigator who flashed the alleged woman victim's photo over campus, and supposedly, reportedly, she subjected to taunts like, "There goes the white girl crying rape," and in 2012 she committed suicide. And then, as Mark noted, that Parker has, let us say, not handled the PR aspects of this very
well.
Yeah,
and I don't want to overemphasize that, because I think, you know, separating the art from the artist is always tricky, and I think where there's two components to that, and is he being unfairly or treated differently because he's a black man? I mean, let's just ask that question, mm-hmm. because that's valid. Or is it because his work was so much so similarly related to accountability, mm-hmm. and right. force and those same issues, that the alleged hypocrisy for the person buying the ticket, yeah. is harder to swallow versus going to see a comedy, mm-hmm. or, yeah. You know, a drama by Polanski or right. something that's, yeah. not in your face about, you know, it's completely different. And, mm-hmm. and does race come into that? Absolutely. Yeah. But is it overt in the choice of that, you know, the guy that lives next door to you buying a ticket or not? Yeah. I don't, yeah. think so. I don't think this was a takedown, mm. either. You know, I don't think it was orchestrated. And I don't think the people aren't going to this film because, yeah. you know, they're afraid of the subject matter, nor those hard
audiences
questions.
Audiences don't, yeah. flock to it. Cause it's right. not a pleasant subject matter anyway. Yeah. In 20 Years a Slave, it wasn't pleasant, and it wasn't the feel-good movie of the year there either.
I also think that Parker, I mean, the issue of campus sexual assault is very, very sensitive right now, and I think
right.
that played into it as well, that
absolutely.
He needed to stand up, and he could have done a much better job addressing the situation, and mm-hmm. I think that factored into it a lot more than people realize.
Yeah. I mean, Linda, do you think there is a little hypocrisy in that, you know, I didn't know Hitchcock did any. I thought it was just this kind of pudgy little guy who lusted after cool blondes from afar. I didn't know he had, I don't know if he had any, you know, active sexually dubious history.
See, now there's reports, yeah. now that Hitchcock, I mean, that's as bad as Bill Cosby in my mind.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It's just disgraceful, really. It's a shame.
Yeah, mm-hmm. well, the thing that, as somebody else pointed out, that, you know, Polanski and Woody Allen, you know, still are respected in Hollywood, and they still get applause. But as somebody suggested, these are guys that had well-established careers before the sexual mm-hmm. mud came out. And does that make a difference versus a guy named Light Parker just getting started?
Yeah, we could probably, you know, we could spend several shows debating the hypocrisy or lack of hypocrisy in the social mores of Hollywood, but they're more forgiving than the mainstream ticket buyer. That was my, you know, only point in terms of when there isn't a direct connection that you know, I think that particularly the critics are going to take the work on its own merit, but the you know, I think it is all related, though, to the times we're in. And I think
exactly.
everything, you know, everything is sort of swirling with a lot of these crossovers, whether it be these judicial cases where juries are giving verdicts that the public doesn't understand and makes assumptions about, to the ones where you have people getting rightfully prosecuted, you know, long after they should have been. And then how does that, you know, affect status quo? And then you've got, you know, the police brutality and that whole thing. So it's just, you know, there is this real, it'll be a real interesting time, I think, during this upcoming Sundance, because Sundance always has a real good pulse on transferring some of these social issues of the day to storytelling, and they tend to be either, you know, right on point or one step ahead. And so I'm really interested in the current slate as that comes up to see, okay, where is the art reflecting what's going on in society right now? And you'll see a bunch of that with some of the documentaries and and stuff in particular.
Yeah. Well, let me try one question. But for, Birth of a Nation was, there was a lot of hope being put into it that it would cure the Oscars so white controversy of the last 2 years. And now if that picture has been derailed, but what are the prospects? What other films might fill that gap, or you know, receive Oscar awards, so Hollywood can say, "Look, we donated to Obama. We're not racist. Come on."
Would you say Loving, maybe?
Right, Loving. Yeah, but the interracial. That's the two breakout performances in that, and also 13, that powerful, well-received documentary by Ava DuVernay, who was the director of Selma. She's on the Oscar shortlist right now. And Moonlight, also.
Which you just mentioned.
No, I think the good news is, you don't even have to break it out by, you know, description or category of black films. The slate for this year will be much stronger and much more competitive because of the quality of the films. And I think Moonlight and Manchester by the Sea will probably vie for most of the awards. But you have Loving, Fences, I'd add to that list.
Denzel Washington.
And a host of others that are going to be in the periphery. So, it's going to be a very, you're going to have a lot of choices. And I think films like Hell or High Water may lose out because of, not necessarily, again, that people, you know, I think the timing element is probably more important, but I think there'll be, given the competitiveness of the slate, if you have a choice between something, you know, that's a little more compelling in the drama categories than a heist film, I think I think the voter will go more towards these very new forms of storytelling like Moonlight. That's just something we've never seen before.
Did anybody see Southside with you?
No. I missed it.
I just wondered if that would attract any nominations, just because of the sentimental value of farewell, Barack. Farewell, Michelle. Oh, we're going to miss you.
I've seen extended cuts from the film because we prepped it for, I think, an interview with somebody during the Sundance Reel, but I didn't see the entire film. I think it's a lovely film. I don't think the production quality is as high as some of the films we're talking about. I think one of the tragedies of this election season is the manner in which the country remembers the Obama family and the love story behind it in particular. And this is if you need a little bit of, if you're one of those people that don't want to march during Inauguration Day and you just want to feel good, you know, go rent that film and just and escape for a little bit. It's a wonderful, wonderful story.
Yeah. Well, let's, maybe we'll get started in on the topic of just what's coming up at Sundance, and just on the programs, what are you guys looking forward to?
Well, I'm looking forward to, as announced last night, the opening film, which is Al Gore's sequel to Inconvenient Truth, which does not officially have a title yet, so being referred to as a sequel to Inconvenient Truth, but timeliness.
Still inconvenient.
Timeliness of that issue and just being able to premiere it here in Park City, I think, is really exciting. So
yeah, that's going to be a hot ticket. They call it the follow-up.
Yeah, the follow-up.
The follow-up to the Inconvenient Truth. And I think that probably means that they are still working on it hard up until the last minute. And I was really surprised that Davis Guggenheim, who was the director of that, isn't directing this one. It's a co-direction. A woman is, I don't have her name with me right now, but who did it. But Al Gore goes around the world and speaks on climate change. So before we were had his slideshow, and I'm just looking really forward to that. That's going to be a hot ticket.
And maybe at the premiere, maybe he'll reveal what he talked about with Trump.
Oh, yes.
Okay. We shall get back to our panel and some of their hopes for Sundance in just a few moments.
Support for KPCW provided by United Concerts, presenting Dead & Company, featuring John Mayer on June 7th at USANA Amphitheater. Tickets available on December 9th, 10 a.m. at all SmithTix outlets and smithtix.com. Dead & Company, June 7th at USANA Amphitheater.
I'm Larry Warren.
And I'm Doug Wells, inviting you to listen Mondays to Mound Money.
Each week, we bring you the business world's leading thinkers, authors, and CEOs.
And we mix in local business leaders who are constantly coming up with new ideas.
Mountain Money every Monday at 9 after NPR News. Brought to you by Mountain West Bank, the Park City Chamber, All Resort Group, Jones Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough, and the Apex Residences and Viridian Park City, Columbus Pacific Properties.
And we're back with our film panel, and we're just looking at the Sundance program, and go over to Linda. What are your kind of favorites from the scheduled program?
Well, I always gravitate towards the documentaries, and I was just mentioning last year OJ seemed to be sort of a theme in a few pieces, but this year it's JonBenet, anniversary of her death, and so casting JonBenet should be interesting. I lived in the area at that time, and it was interesting to see how everything was rolling out, so that should be interesting. Also, yeah. A lot of the new climate program documentaries and films that are going to be featured, but Chasing Coral should be really interesting.
And there's
as well.
one called Trophy, I think, about
I want to see that one.
The business of big game Big game hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know if the dentist who shot Cecil, I don't think he'll show up at one of the screenings or anything.
And then Plastic, I don't know if that's the title about the young girl that works in the plastic factory with her parents, and I think that'll be interesting as well. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly, Icarus?
Icarus?
A document, about doping in sports, which I think over the announcement of the last couple of days about 1,000 Russian athletes having some performance enhancement will also be timely.
And Mark, what are you looking forward to?
Well, I'm a big fan of Forrest Whitaker's production company that gave us both Dope and Fruitvale Station, and they've got another film coming out called Roxanne, biopic on Roxanne Shanté, and I think they just really transcend the typical music biopic and those sort of urban coming of age stories, and I think you'll see a bit of a blend of that in this with a really compelling look again at a scene that a lot of us, particularly in Utah, are fairly foreign to, and so I think it's a really looking forward to that combination, and that by all accounts they've cast a newcomer, which I always like, Shanté Adams, and early reports are she just really has a great breakout performance.
And some of the stuff that kind of looks interesting to me is on the midnight session. I always try to get to the midnight session, just the strange atmosphere. But the kind of a documentary called 78/52, which I think is the is a reference to the number of cuts and editing and things, but it's a film all about the shower scene in Psycho.
Oh, I heard that's a great movie.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that one.
I wasn't sure if it was slash the symbol or slash the word.
Well, either, yeah.
Yeah.
A film that sounds like this might have been made, definitely made before the election. I wonder if it'll be affected by current events. It's a Bushwick, which is about a civil war that breaks out because Texas wants to secede from the Union. And I wonder if that'll be if that'll run the risk of being out of date, because now I think it's California that wants to secede from the union.
Yeah.
There's a couple of movies with Utah connections. I think the one that filmed in Utah called Bridgsby Bear, which sounds sounds like a cross between Pee-wee's Playhouse and the Truman Show. Something about a guy hearing that his favorite kiddie TV show was canceled, but it was somehow finding out that it was made only for him, or he was literally the only person who ever watched it. So I'm not quite sure what that premise is, but that'll be interesting. Can we take a little hometown pride in that the one of the premieres is called Wind River, which was made around the Wasatch Back area and shot out of the Park City Film Studio.
Which one?
Wind River. Wind River, which is in the premieres, Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen. And so it'll be one of those things where regardless of the quality of the picture, you look at the outdoor scenes and say, yeah, I went cross-country skiing in it there, you know. I know that spot.
I love it.
In the premieres, it's kind of interesting that there are kind of more than usual, some of the premieres have kind of this fantasy sci-fi aspect to them. And The Discovery is a picture which includes Robert Redford in the cast, and the idea that they have been able to scientifically prove that the afterlife exists, and the result is that millions of people are committing suicide in order to get there. And this is set in the midst of a love story. So that'll be an interesting one to see.
Only Sundance.
And I'm kind of looking forward to, I think it's in the dramatic competition, which is a picture called The Hero, which stars Sam Elliott as a retired Western movie cowboy. It says he's living a comfortable existence, lending his golden voice to advertisements and smoking weed, which Sam will have to ask him if this is autobiographical. But and he's comes to face an important life choice. So the a lot of, you know, as usual, just more stuff than you can possibly imagine.
Yeah, so much. You know, I seem to like to go to a lot of the films because of the director. And Sundance does such a great job with the premieres. In the documentary premieres, there's, you know, now a category. And there's four that I'm really interested in. Rory Kennedy of Kennedy fame. She's just a master documentary filmmaker. And she's followed Laird Hamilton. And she has a film called Take Every Wave. You know, he's the big wave surfer. And that's in the documentary premiere section. Also, Stanley Nelson. He's has a film called Tell Them We Are Rising, the story of black colleges and universities. And Stanley, boy, if you look at the directors who's been in the Sundance the most, he might be the guy who takes the cake. He's been at the Sundance year after year with films. And
yeah, a long record of nearly 20 years and documentaries about black history and the subcultures of black life in America that maybe we don't know about very much.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Also, Barbara Koppel, who is the Academy Award winner twice for American Dream and, oh gosh, what's the other one? I'll think about it. But she has a film called This Is Everything, Gigi Gorgeous, and it's about a Olympic-bound diver who is transitioning into being a woman. And Barbara Koppel is just one of those master documentarians that, you know, you just don't miss. And the last one is Lucy Walker. She's back at Sundance with her Buena Vista Social Club documentary that she's been in Cuba all summer. It's been fun following her on Facebook and stuff, and she always posts about her process. So I'm looking forward to that.
Okay, and let's see, there's just reading some of the plots here attract attention, but I think there's one called The Poker King with Jack Black, which is described as both a comedy and a tragedy. It's about the world's only known poker Ponzi scheme and how that is both funny and tragic at the same time. I don't know. So we'll have to. But before our time runs out too much, I did want to ask us all to bow our heads and doff our hats and pay respects to a guy who was 100 years old yesterday.
Oh, yes.
Kirk Douglas.
Still punching.
Still slowed down by a stroke in recent years. But I just wanted to go around it. You know, your favorite memories of Kirk Douglas. Linda?
Well, I don't have a lot. I mean, I've obviously seen a few of his films, but I was just thinking the last I saw was It Runs in the Family, which was after his stroke, correct? Mm. I think so. I mean, just a leader, leading a legacy of film and actors, and definitely an inspiring career. I did share with this group yesterday. I came across a rather racy retrospective of Kirk Douglas. So it's quite the...
I read that, Linda. That was it Kiss and Tell?
Yeah,
boy,
definitely
he really
Kiss and
dished
Tell.
It out.
Yeah, he dished it out. It was just basically documenting his conquests with female co-stars over the years. So.
He even said in this book, Marilyn Monroe, on screen, she's the most beautiful woman in the world, but in person, blah. She's always late.
And he ran away from Joan Crawford. He had a date with Joan Crawford. I think they went back to her house, and the horrors we've heard about her are apparently true, and he just ran the other direction.
I've heard that story. Yes, she took him to the house, and she showed him where the
kids were.
Where the kids were chained up to the bed for the night or something.
Yep.
And so Kurt said, you know, that he got out of there quickly.
There was one movie that he was in. In 1982 that I just watched over and over, and I don't know if you guys remember this one, but The Man from Snowy River. Remember that one?
Oh, I don't know if Kurt did a decent Australian accent, but Kurt Douglas.
Probably not.
And horses, and a lot of horses running down hills and jumping over cliffs.
Yes.
And Mark?
Well, I'm always interested on two fronts. One is I always look for the smaller work that sometimes is overlooked, and then also some personal backstory. So on the first front, one of my favorite films is The Final Countdown from 1980. It's time appropriate because it had to do with Pearl Harbor. It's the plot is if an aircraft carrier with the capabilities of the USS Nimitz went through a time travel and showed up in the middle of the Pacific the week before Pearl Harbor, what would it do? And so it's just this great little small quirky film that I've always remembered. And he plays the captain of the carrier that in fact does that. So it's just a fun sci-fi film. And then on the personal front, you know, he is one of those guys that, you know, never really, you know, he's not a Paul Newman. He's not a crusader. Now, he knew he was, I think, he called himself a bastard or a bad person, whatever. You know, he was, a bit of a guy's guy that ran around and chased women and, but didn't say he was more than that until he got stardom. And then he started, he played a role, and it's debated how much, but he did, in fact, help end the blacklist process.
The Spartacus.
In a recent interview, he really lamented almost a failure because he never hit it big on Broadway. And he was such an emotional actor. He had such a regret that lightning never struck for him with the right opportunity there. And he really penned, if you want to Google his last book, and he has this Why I Was a Failure, and I think even the Huffington or somebody ran a smaller version of it. But he writes beautifully about what the difference is between stage work and cinema work, mm-hmm. and what it's like to be an actor in real-time engagement versus being followed by the cyclone eye of the camera. Yeah. And it's very compelling writing.
Okay. Well, we'll be back after this pause, and let's exit on Kirk 1 there, which would be appropriate for Spartacus. And and we're going to be back with a special new feature.
Grammy Award-winning tropical band Pacific Mambo Orchestra comes to the Eccles Stage on Saturday, December 17th. Mixing salsa cha-cha with American jazz, R&B, and even a little hip-hop, their big band sound is infectious and fiery. All the better to warm up a cold winter night. Evening begins at 7:30. Tickets begin at $29. Call 655-3114. Brought to you by the not-for-profit Park City Institute, entertaining, educating, and illuminating since 1998, and a KPCW supporter.
Hi, this is Lauren Forsyth with Christopher K. Greenwood & Associates, supporting my hometown radio station, KPCW. Christopher K. Greenwood & Associates offers legal services in criminal, DUI, family, divorce, personal injury, and real estate. Christopher K. Greenwood & Associates at the Gateway Center, 655-3680.
Josh Carr here, membership director at Park Meadows Country Club, sponsor of KPCW. Park Meadows offers an 18-hole Jack Nicklaus golf course, weekly ski groups, on-mountain club including parking and locker room at Chateau Deer Valley, cross-country skiing, fine dining, and fitness center. Golf and social memberships available at 649-2460 or on the web.
And just to add, so we'd like to introduce our new segment called The Other Side of the Production Board, where the legendary Monica Goodner has been running our board here for the last hour. And we just wanted, before the hour ends, we wanted to see if she had any thoughts about our just any of the topics we've discussed in the past hour, anything you want to, you know, kind of throw in.
Well, you know, you guys covered a lot of, a lot of heavy stuff today, sexual assault, race, politics, but I feel like I might have the most controversial thing to say today.
Okay.
The only movie I've seen recently is Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Yeah.
I didn't love it.
Oh.
I know, and I feel like I'm going to get a lot of Harry Potter hate mail for that. Mm. Yep. See, Jill's already got her fists up, yeah.
Cat fight.
Do you have a favorite Kirk Douglas moment? Or are you like,
I can't name a Kirk Douglas to save my movie to save my life. Sorry.
Oh,
I when Rick said you guys were going to be talking about it, I'm like, oh God, did he die? And no, he did the opposite.
His son Michael.
He just made it to 100. But
the chin.
The chin. Well, you got the half dozen, you know, Kirk and Burt Lancaster movies that a lot of the classics there, but their last one, Tough Guys, which is worth watching alone for the moment, where Kirk Douglas imitates Burt Lancaster.
I'll put that on my list.
For a couple of seconds. But now, Monica, I don't know if you're this Potter phobia of yours. have you seen many of the Harry Potter pictures? Did you have an opinion or a feeling about those?
I've seen all of them except the Deathly Hallows, which I've read all the books except the last one. Yeah, that's how disconnected I am.
Okay, so
I don't need to find out how. I should say I read the last chapter. I'm like, okay, he's dead. She's okay. All right, and I'm good.
Okay, so you read the books and you saw most of the pits. So you're not a Potter phobe. Let's not get nasty.
I did not ever buy into the mania.
Oh, and see, I'm entrenched with my children. Mm-hmm. It was part of their growing up. I've got it on the other, you know, end of the spectrum.
Yeah, everybody else does. Also not a Twilight fan, so there. Mm. Let the hate mail come.
Yeah, well, It's respectable to not be a Twilight fan.
Thank you. Thank you.
Nothing wrong with that, Monica. Nothing wrong with that.
Okay. Right. And on that note, Kirk fans, feel free to Twitter us, but Potter fans, hold it down. Let's once again thank our expert panel, Linda Jager, Mark Harrington, and Jill Orschel, and on the board, Monica Goodner, and we shall see you. Hopefully, we'll see you post Sundance, and we'll discuss how all that stuff came down.
All right, this is KPCW Park City.
Local programming on KPCW is brought to you by a generous grant from Summit County RapTax. Recreation, Arts, and Parks Cultural Grant supports organizations that enrich the overall quality of life for residents throughout the county.